Blog Talk Radio.
And good Ninja Sunday. It is Shelly Munchucks on the Ninja Sunday Show. Woo! I've got an extra special treat for everyone today. I will be getting to my guest. I only have one guest today, but it's a super excited weekend, and I will tell you guys all in one moment. I'm just so wicked pumped. I might have a breakdown here live on the show, but first getting into the promos. To start off with, actually, it's the one that I've been promoting since the beginning of, I'm trying to pull it up right now since I started my Ninja Sunday show. So where is it? I'm having a brain fart. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm trying to find out where it is. I know I put it on my page. You guys don't see it. I know I'm going to have to go live eventually more. I'm talking here. So where did I go? It's the Sarah Joy Foundation, and it should be on my page. Where the heck is it?
You got to be kidding me. Oh, I thought my Facebook page was having a brain fart here. So let me bring this up. Our first promo for Ninja Sunday is the Sarah Joy Foundation. The Sarah Joy Foundation is a way of honoring Sarah Joy, who passed away from cancer at 32 years of age, leaving behind two small boys and her husband, Eric. Through this foundation, our vision is to create a way to help families and cancer patients enjoy their life as much as they can. Sarah, in her last year, did more traveling and activities than most people do in a lifetime. She went jet skiing, parasailing, hiking, golfing, saw every beach on the East Coast. The list goes on and on. She did all this while being told she was too sick to even get out of bed. Too many families make their lives a hustle bed and four walls, and because of this illness and that, for Sarah was never an option. Through raising money, we'd like to offer other families the same joy that Sarah and we had before she passed. It's amazing what a day at a spa could do or a roller coaster ride with your kids. Having cancer does not mean death, and people shouldn't mourn someone while they are alive. Enjoy life, love the summer breeze, the winter snow, the leaves in the fall, as well as the spring. We'll be organizing fundraisers of all kinds, shapes, and sizes. To let everyone know, I did not get to meet the one, the Sarah, myself. This is part of my extended family members. And what had happened is Sarah was actually pregnant with her second child, and for fear of losing a child to treatment, she did not want to receive treatment. Her child was born, and what had happened, she succumbed to the illness. And it's really hard to say what somebody in family that goes through this, that, you know, how do they go on? So they created out of this cloud a silver lining of the Sarah Joy Foundation. Check it out on Facebook. You can always come back and check it there. So we went on to the second promo. It's kind of like a combination of two, because it's like one's going to lead into the other, like I always do when rambling on. About the Daily Bread Bakery. It's an awesome, awesome bakery. It's in Standish, Maine. I actually went there like a week ago, and it's really great. I love going there. And just to go to GoFundMe.com, look for Daily Bread Bakery. And this is from Aurora Zakora to Lisa, the man himself. It's his bakery. 2 years ago, I started Daily Bread Low Sodium Bakery. It's been a goal of mine for 30 years to have a bakery and provide lovely baked goods to everyone. I started the bakery, have been running it and holding my own without falling into too much debt. We rent the place and have totally renovated so that it is a wonderfully calming and inviting environment. We serve healthy baked goods, coffee, and tea. We are a full-service bakery, which means that there's no task too hard for us, and we serve everyone equally. There are a few bakeries and fewer still in Standish, Maine area. We compete with Dunkin' Donuts and Aroma Joe's, the bastards. They actually, I've seen this, he actually opened up his bakery before these people started to swim, but it's true. He started his business before they moved on down the street. Yeah, bastards. It's happened to move in less than a half a mile away from us. This one had been difficult as people come out for local business like us, and I've had trouble making money. I'm not far behind, but I'm in danger of losing the bakery if I cannot come up with the money fast. I've returned to GoFundMe at last resort. Please help me save my bakery. I've always worked and earned my keep, but this time I need help. Daily Bread Bakery in Standish is definitely worth it. I love my bakery and do well. For those that help, I will offer free special monthlies and thanks in your crate, magazine, baked goods to the community. Thank you. Aurora, Zakor, Delisa. Oh, everybody just calls them Z. So check that out. Go there. And to lead into my extra special weekend, if I don't choke up during this live, something I've been part of for the past 7 years, ladies and gentlemen. Let me say, I actually left Boston, took my clothes in a car, and came up to Maine, became something part of film. It's actually a series now released on Vimeo called Valkyr. I am one of the leads, and it takes 7 years. We were filming like Rocky, training in the snow, deep in snow, so cold. I was trying to try to see how am I going to survive out in the cold. I did a Jackie Chan, stuck my head between my legs, worked, trained on film. We took horseback rentals, and it's finally on Vimeo, ladies and gentlemen. I'm finally on Vimeo, and you can actually, if you know, it's a buck to rent, like, the miniseries, and it's something where you can buy it all at once, or you have to check it out. I'm just going to start crying, because to see that this is actually, and I'm supposed to be professional, but it's something finally after 7 years on Vimeo, and just to be so happy to know that this is finally released, and directly worked so hard. This is his vision, and to have someone believe in me. You know, I've got the Boston accent where I got my start. Why I went up to California is because he believed in me so much that he put me in a series of me being part of the film, and, you know, I'm doing comedy. I'm the big goofball and stuff when you watch it, but just that it's finally released on Vimeo, and people can actually see this. It's about good versus evil,
it's about, if you know Thor and about the gods and I guess the Nordic gods and goddesses, you'll understand this probably more than I, because I'm into ninjas and samurais and stuff, but my character, I can't speak for anybody else that's part of this. You know, I only did acting. It does take a whole community of people to make this come to life, but only I can talk of my experience. I can't talk to anybody else, but just the fact is, you know, here I am, a Bostonian, you know, like Rocky, you know, doing the Rocky thing, saying, oh, I want to train like Rocky. Oh, my God, be careful what you wish for. Knee deep in snow, freezing my butt off in the elements, you know, getting bit by bugs, getting up on a horse, pray that, oh, my gosh, this horse doesn't come behind me. But I'm just like, go and watch this. It's family-oriented. And if you're sick and tired of remakes, you know, be invested in independent filming. This is why I do my show, and the person that I'm actually going to bring up, his name is Chris Esper, and I hope it, forgive my accent, Bostonian accent, he's actually a filmmaker. Why I do the show, not just getting people from Hollywood, and he's the only one who I have scheduled on my show today, but the reason why I do my show, not just to bring your people from like Hollywood working on acting stuff, but the independent filmmakers, you've got to invest in them. Invest in independent filmmakers. If you're tired of remakes, look in your community. Look for the independent filmmakers. You know, you can even, like, even help out, invest your time. You can become an extra. Donate. Look for their fundraisers. You know, contact them. You can work and work on sets. Contact them. Support, support independent filmmakers. They're the ones, they write, and most people, they actually do have full-time jobs. They take the time out. They write. They get, you know, it's a whole thing that they do. Sometimes they're up like 24, 48 hours straight to do filming, and it's not something you have like a big, big, huge budget. Sometimes people take it out of their own pockets and everything like that. They have to work to work the best of what they have. This is why I do my show, because I like supporting myself, independent filmmakers, because they are the underdogs out there. And when they have a film out there, I support, because I love these people. They are the underdogs of filmmaking. So give me one moment, ladies and gentlemen, now that I've got it up to speed and wiping away these tears of joy. Hold on for a second. Okay, hey, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Chris.
Hey, Christopher, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I woke you up or not.
No. Oh, no, not at all.
So welcome to Ninja Sunday.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Like, this is, I'm going to put the link on the wall on your page. I don't know if I did that or not, but what I'll do is I'll put the link for the show so anybody can listen to it. So, you know, it's been a while, but, you know, finally got you on the air here.
Yes.
So I don't know if you know, it's like I have a lot of energy, so if you haven't had a cup of coffee by now, just be prepared. So, you know, just before all the good stuff with filming and stuff, and this is how I always do, you know, can you tell us, you know, if you don't have to or anything like that, just let, you know, listeners know, how was it like for you growing up, you know, like, you know, for you growing up in school and stuff before you got into films?
Growing up was a lot of fun. I'm actually from Jersey, and a lot of my interest in film began at that young age. I lived across the street from a video store, so I would very often go there myself or take a family member there or a friend or somebody and just, like, go to the store just like and rent movie after movie after movie and just filling my mind with all this information and images. And, you know, eventually I got a computer, and IMDb was kind of a thing. And so I started doing research on all these different films I've seen and find out who directed them, who wrote them, who starred in them. All this trivia that, you know, that I very often would use it in school a lot, including I had seen Ghostbusters when I was 10 years old, and I loved it so much so that I attempted to write a screenplay in that same vein about sort of a sci-fi comedy about a boy and his robot that has to fight aliens. It was a lot of fun, and And I remember telling my fourth grade friends, oh, hey, you know, we're going to make this movie. We're going to make this movie. And everyone's like, oh, cool. That's awesome. And so I was even so gutsy that I even sent the script to Columbia Pictures because they produced Ghostbusters. I'm like, all right, well, this is logical. So it got sent back to me, of course, but I still have it. I read it a while back, and you know, it's funny reading it now, but then I think it was sort of a self-discovery moment about where it would lead me to where I am now. I mean, I mean, right after that, let's see, that was at age 10. And then by 14, I had moved to Rhode Island with my family, and I lived in New England pretty much ever since. In middle school and in high school, throughout, I did drama club and acting, and that's kind of how that interest kind of got started. And then, you know, I tried experimenting in my teens with stand-up comedy and puppetry and animation and, you know, photography, pretty much a whole bunch of art forms to try to see what it is I really wanted to do, what I loved. And then by 17, I kind of rediscovered film again, in the sense that I started watching movies more as an art form and not so much just as entertainment. And then I kind of refueled that love for filmmaking again, and I got my first camera and just started experimenting. I realized very quickly that everything I loved throughout life, I'm able to put into one medium, you know, acting and photography and animation, all that stuff. I could put it all into one medium, that be it film. So it's almost like I was doing all those things, but I'm just a captain driving the ship. And so that's when I discovered I really wanted to be a director by 17 or 18. And then I went to New England Tech, studied film there. But growing up was fun in that way. It was always a lot of self-discovery, a lot of creativity. And my parents were always very encouraging about that. And so it was always fun in that sense.
Oh, sweet. So did you, who was, your inspirations growing up? Who did you admire? Because usually people I personally always mention I like Jackie Chan and stuff like that. For your filmmaking and your style, I mean, who inspired you in the business? Did you have someone or family members that inspired you with filmmaking?
Yeah, quite a few. I mean, when I was a little kid, I always gravitated towards any movie that Rob Williams had done, I always found him hysterically funny, and I also thought that he was an incredibly gifted actor, of course. And so, you know, and that kind of carried over into my teens when I tried doing acting and stand-up was his inspiration in that sense. And of course, you know, when we lost him, that was huge. Certainly I cried like a baby. I even wrote to him when I was 12, you know, and he wrote back with a autographed photo, which I treasure now more than ever to this day. So he was inspiring in that sense. And also in terms of filmmakers, there's a ton. The one that stands out for me most is Martin Scorsese. I always loved his work. When I saw Raging Bull for the first time at, 16 or 17, that's when I really knew I wanted to get into filmmaking for sure, was because his artistic integrity, his passion, and the way he talks about cinema, his love for cinema, it is so contagious that it just rubbed off on me. Just listening to him speak about it, hear him speak about camera work and editing and why he chose to move a camera a certain way or what have you. It was like, I realized, oh wow, this guy is an artist, and you know, he's much more than this guy that just makes these very entertaining movies. He's also a painter, but his paintbrush is the camera, you know. And so that's kind of what I discovered, that I loved film that much. And then Stanley Kubrick, I've always loved, and Alfred Hitchcock, David Cronenberg, you know, list goes on. A number of directors that I love, Jim Henson, I also admired a great deal. I always loved the Muppets and just his creativity in his work, especially films like The Dark Crystal or Labyrinth, where it was like these very elaborate, beautiful images and the ideas that he put onto film. Walt Disney was another one for me. He captured my imagination and also captured, you know, that child that child love that still keeps me doing what I'm doing, in that sense. So yeah, tons of inspirations, but those folks I think are some of the top ones.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing here, like, going through, like, I try to bring up as I'm speaking to my guests if I have access to their Facebook page, and I'm like, look, and I was like, I'm like, I don't know if you happen to like ninjas, because I'm looking at, like, because my big thing is ninjas and samurais. I'm looking at, it says untitled album. It says updated about 4 years ago. You got, like, the Green Ranger, and you've got, like, Chewbacca, which is, like, you know, Jedis or, like, samurais and stuff. So I was like, yeah, he must kind of like ninjas, too. I was, like, seeing this because I think, you know, the Comic Cons and stuff like that, they've just been around for years. And,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, it's kind of like, he likes ninjas. Just seeing this, I was what's that?
That photo, because I went to Rhode Island Comic Con. I had met a couple of the Power Ranger actors because I used to love Power Rangers growing up. I was really into that, so this is that probably explains that. But no, I do like boxing actually. I mean, one of my favorite. I mean, you mentioned Rocky. That's like my all time favorite movie actually.
God, now you won my heart. That's it. Seriously, as if you know, it's this is just awesome. Now that I know that, Chris, now I'm going to have to want to work with you. I hope you know that. I'm going to be like,
oh,
man, some way, somehow, we have got to work together because, you know, after I've been on the air for almost like 5 years and I got in touch with Survivor and they gave, like, people say, you should just play songs on your show, right? I says, I don't want to risk it and get the show being taken away or sued. So I actually finally got in touch with Survivor, and I asked him, you know, can I play, you know, Eye of the Tiger? Because the whole thing with the political things, they were taking it, and it was like, it's not to be about a political thing and all the rallies and stuff. And I says, you know, I would bring honor. I says, me and so many people, we love Rocky. I'm an underdog and stuff like that. And they gave me permission. I'm like, oh, my gosh, thank you. So I get to open
That's
up
amazing.
The show, and I did not know that. I'm sorry.
All right, amazing. That's awesome.
Thank you. And now that you know, I was like, see, this is why I connect with guests. You did not tell me. I did not know you were a Rocky fan, and see, we're connected.
Oh, yeah.
See how I connect with people? It's like because I think I connected to you through, I don't know, someone else, I think. With Nathan Sewer, I think that's how
mm-hmm.
I connected. So this is what keeps happening because didn't you work, I'll get into the film and stuff like that. It's like, this is how it happens. It's like with connections and it's like, just keep liking what you like and you get connected. And it's really hard because I've been dedicated to something for the same thing for the past 7 years. And it's like people that, you know, I connect with on Facebook, I want to work, but I can't just like, okay, I was dedicated to something and people are like, come work with me on the thing because I'm a package deal, you know, like acting and promoting on stuff. So I think, like I said, with Nathan is how I had him on the show a couple of times with Scary Little Fuckers. And that's the name of the title.
Yeah.
It actually is, you know, Fuckers, Fuckers, whatever.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like, you know, it's like getting connected and we can talk more about that in a moment. Like I said, it's the good stuff. So how did you get into filming and what are some of the films, you know, that you've released?
Like I said, I got into film, while I was in college and I was studying filmmaking and video, I started to connect with people outside of school, you know, working on film sets and things like that, like working in the camera department or working in the or doing editing for someone, you know, things like that. And then eventually, but I knew I wanted to be a director. And so the challenge was how to get the film made and also how to, you know, get the right people to work with. That took a long time to finally grasp. And so I started making just like small student films for school and, you know, and eventually my network grew until I started doing stuff outside of school, which is kind of the stuff that I'm known for now. Like the first film I did out of college was a short drama called Still Life, played in about, I want to say like 8 film festivals. It did pretty well. I mean, it's rough around the edges when I look at it now, but it's clear that it's a film by me. You know, it has my style. It has a very personal story. And it's also, I every time I describe that film, I always say that if a film could be a self-portrait, it's that one, because it was so, it was, you know, I wrote it, I directed it, and, you know, it was really the first film I ever did professionally that actually got some recognition, you know, with film critics reviewing it and then, you know, getting the festival circuit. And then after that, I did a couple of very short things. I did a project for a Project Greenlight that was really fun. We didn't win the competition, but it was still was a lot of fun to make. Always a Reason. That played really well also. And you know, I did a short comedy called Steak Knives. But the one that really took off was a comedy I did called Please Punish Me. And that played in about 21 film festivals and did extremely well. I just put it online probably a few weeks ago. That one has been really popular. It won a couple of awards. And then most recently, the two most recent films I've been releasing are The Deja Vuers and Undatement Center. Undatement Center, which I actually wrote, and those two have been doing extremely well with film critics and with film festivals thus far. Both of them play on Monday, actually, in L.A., which I wish I could be there for, but in any case, it's a very cool honor. And right now I'm in production on my latest one. But no, yeah, I've just been done a lot of stuff over the years, web shows, but mostly the filmmaking, the film side of things is really what I'm focused on. And so as far as short films go, that's what I've done so far.
Okay. And what, I was trying to like bring up my it's a little bit slow here on my internet. It says, official selection. I guess it's stuck on your untitled album. It says, does it say S-E-N-E? Is that,
Selection. Yeah, the Scene Film Festival. They're based out of Rhode Island, and it's a fantastic festival. I've been at a festival, oh my gosh, I think for the past couple of years now, I think about like 5 years now, I played something, be it a music video or a short film. This year, the Deja Vuers is playing there on Saturday, Tuesday night, a music video that I did is playing there as well. But that festival is fantastic. It's always great filmmakers, you know, a lot of great networking opportunities. So I love going to that festival every year when I get the chance.
Okay. And I'm just pulling up here. So just going through your Facebook page, and like I said, I get connected with people just by being connected. It's just like by accident. You know, it's like people always try to make connections,
yeah,
but it keeps happening with accidents. And what did you work on with Nathan? I was trying to remember, there was something you worked on with him, how we got connected somehow.
You worked
on a film,
yeah, Nathan,
right, with him?
Yeah, Nathan and I have worked together for, I want to say, almost 5 years now. And at first, it was mostly just doing a lot of video work for him because he did a lot of weddings, and I did too, still do. And so I worked with him a lot, you know, shooting with him, shooting a bunch of weddings and video projects, and then eventually got into the film side of things with him. He did a short film called Right There, a silent film, which I did the editing for. And I helped a little bit on Scary Little Fuckers. I did the editing for the trailer. That was a ton of fun. But I think my biggest collaboration with him to date was most recently. He did his first feature film, Higher Methods, which I was co-producer and assistant director on. And that was back in January, actually. That was, you know, a lot of fun. It was 14 days of shooting in a row. Oh, it was great.
Oh, okay. I was like, I actually did see that. And the funny thing is, I actually do, like, I got to get caught up with him. I was doing reactions to watching trailers and stuff. And I think he put it on the Scary Little Fuckers site. He actually put me on there, like, you know, for films and stuff like that. And I've done this for people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, if you ever have something you want me to watch, too, of your work, a lot of people, like, I feel very honored because it's like, you know, a whole trust system, and this is what I'm building up in the business. People have been sending me links to their films, and that's how I'm able to watch them, because, like, I'll actually will look at it. I'm not a movie critic per se, but if there was something you ever had you wanted to watch and you had sent it to me, like, I can do a reaction, because it's like, you know, just watching and having a real reaction. And when I think of movie critics and
I was like, they may have went to school to learn about films and movie critique and all like that, but if you never actually worked on a set or, you know what I'm saying? It's like, how can you have a real feel and critique something where you never made a film? Like, it's kind of like, like, how can you do that? It's like going to the hospital. I broke my foot, but now, like, I can, you know, even though I've had so many times in the emergency room, now I can, like, be a doctor and be a heart surgeon. Like, I never understood that, and movie critics sometimes will tear apart a film, so I'm like, what I'm doing is not kissing butt, it's like, oh, this is what I like about the film. You know what I'm saying? It's like being a positive kind of watching something, and says, oh, this is what I like about the film, this is my experience, it's not anybody else of watching a film, so if there's ever anything you want me to watch, I can tape myself and, you know, tag you in it. Don't worry, I only tag when you're related to it. So just because I know people do that on Facebook all the time, like, why are you tagging that person and it has nothing to do with them? It's like, oh. Yeah. So, you know, if you have something you want me to watch, you know, I can actually do that. So with what you're working, you know, I saw, like, there's a really cool picture that I think is really cool of you. I think of it, like, trying to go back here. The red cam, the red eye, is that what it is? It's like, it's called Red Pro.
Yes.
Is that the actual camera itself?
The actual camera itself is the Red Scarlet, which I wish it was mine, but it belongs to my director of photography, Evan. And, it's from our latest short film that we're working on called Bent. It's a crime drama, which Chris Salvi wrote, and that's currently in production. We did some shooting yesterday, actually, and we have about, I want to say, 3 more days to go. It's certainly my most ambitious project to date, but which is great. I love a good challenge. And so it's coming along really nicely. Footage looks great. Acting is terrific. So it's very exciting.
Oh, cool. I'm learning, like, I just got a Nikon camera, and it has, like, the little SIM card, so I'm just beginning to learn about filming. It's like, what is it that, I mean, just so that you've worked with Red, what is so good about Red? Because I've heard people say, mention the word red cameras, and I'm thinking of Red Eye, like, nighttime and stuff like that. What is really good about these Red cameras that say Red on them?
The Red cameras are really good because of the resolution, because they shoot in 4K, which 4K is like kind of like the resolution that you see on television or in the cinema. It's like, you know, it's like the it just captures a lot of detail that most of the prosumer cameras can't really do. And it's not so much that the prosumer cameras are bad, you know, far from it. The Red camera just happens to capture a lot of detail, and it also shoots in what we call a flat picture profile, meaning that we can have full control over the coloring to give it any kind of look that we wanted to give it. For example, with Bent, where we're going for a very kind of film noir type of style, meaning that it's very almost like a 40s mystery film, where it's like a lot of stark contrast in the shadows and, you know, a lot of bright spots of light. And so, by shooting on the red, we're able to play with the colors a lot to give it that look. That's kind of what Red does. Yeah, Red just has a very, a really great resolution to it that most independent filmmakers can somewhat easily get their hands on. So.
Okay, and something where, you know, since, you know, you're a filmmaker, I can ask you questions. you know, it's like here I am with a Nikon camera, right? And I went to a guy I know, his bakery, and his daughter was doing hula. And the thing is, I'm trying to set it and trying to learn, and I'm trying to take the picture, and she's doing movements with the hula, and it's like, for an action shot, it was blurred. Like, I get more, but it's like, you move the arm and stuff, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? I'm sitting here going, it's like, I know you can do action shots on films and stuff like that. Is it like people say maybe it's the shutter or something? Like, I'm still trying to learn. And it's like, is the Red Pro, is that good for action? I mean, like, what is that something that you would see? Like, I just saw the new Fast and Furious. Like, is there a difference? Mm-hmm. Can you use that for, like, action? Like, what is really good for, like, action if you were doing, like, a Fast and Furious or, you know, action itself kind of camera?
The Red is great for that because you could also, you mentioned action shots. the best way to get, you know, clear action shots without the motion blur is by shooting at a very high shutter speed. So whoever told you about shutter is absolutely correct, because I'm gonna be getting a little techie right now. But
it's okay.
The higher the but the higher the shutter speed, the less light comes into the camera, which means that if you add a little bit more light and you can actually you could see more detail in the movement, whereas with a very lower shutter speed, it's much more blurred. So, for example, well, if you ever see a photo of car lights, you know, where the taillights kind of streak into the night,
mm-hmm.
that was shot with a very fast with a very fast shutter speed. So the shutter takes light in very, very quickly, and so which creates those streak of lights. Whereas with a very slower shutter speed, there's more time to create those streaks. At least I think that's how it goes. I may have it backwards, but it all has to do with the shutter for sure. Absolutely. By playing with the shutter, you could have the ability to get more detailed action shots where nothing is blurred and it's crystal clear. You could do slow motion. Or you could change the frame rate to create slow motion. So the Red can definitely do that. Not sure about the Nikons, but definitely if you play with shutter speed, you could definitely get some action shots that are crystal clear.
Mm-hmm. To learn, like people, see,
oh,
it's
yeah,
like
sure.
being on sets and stuff like that. See, we know because it's like when people are like saying things like about acting and all stuff like that. It's like, well, I can act and get in there, but people really don't understand what it is, the hard work to like to do act, and it's just not just standing there and saying words. There's so much more to
right.
it, because you know you see comments and stuff and people saying, well, I can do this and that, but the reality is you're on a set sometimes 12, 14 more hours a day, and if people don't even have patience for like, you know, standing in line for a cup of coffee, they're not going to know about true dynamics of actually working on a set. So it's like, you know, you got hands on, you're going behind the camera. So it's something where when people, you know, they're just going to movies, they're thinking about, you know, just the plot and the actors. But people like yourself that are making the films, it's a combination. It's like you become like a film family for that time, you know, working together. So it's really that experience. And what, you know, what was one of the best experiences that you've actually had working on a film set?
Oh, man. That's really tough because every film I've made or worked on, I've left the set either in kind of a mourning period that was over, or that's or learning a lot, or just the camaraderie from everybody on the set and working together. But one of my favorites, well, Higher Methods, working with Nathan on that certainly was up there, because you know we shot for 14 days and then you know. You know, there were a lot of ups and downs, certainly, but at the end of it, I remember leaving the set, and it was like a close family member had died, because it was over, and it was like, oh well, you know, so what do we do now with our days? there's no schedule to keep. It's all over, and I remember getting a little teary eyed actually when it was over, because it was actually a really fun experience. The people were wonderful. It was just a blast of 14 days of pure of creativity and creating together and making something together. And I guess the same goes for some of the more recent films that I've made personally. Undamon Center was a ton of fun to make. We shot for 3 days, and when it was over, you know, like, I mean, it was like the most, I would say it was easily the most, the easiest shoot I've ever had to do, because of the situation that we were in and using primarily one location. But even so, it was just a very smooth set. And then when it was over, I just remember thinking that's it. Like, it was just so, it was just a lot of fun to do. And so that was a fun one. And, let's see, Deja Vu was fun as well. But yeah, definitely Higher Methods is up there for me for one of the most fun and also the most where I felt like a family when it was over.
And, like, looking on your sorry that I'm trying to look on your Facebook page here and stuff, it's kind of like, I think I heard, you know, a couple of these film festivals. It's like, I think there's Sanford, so that I think that was the one up in Maine, and, like, I was just going
yep.
through everything here. There is actually another question that I do ask all my guests, same question, because, you know, when you work on an art, whether you're a director or an actor, it's, you know, art, whatever you do, you're an artist, it's part of your spirit, your soul, part of your bloodline that keeps you alive. Was there ever
mm-hmm.
a time in your life that you had a hard time and you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this day? And if so, how did you rise above that experience? You're like, oh my God, I can't make it. It's like, to give people inspiration and stuff like that, that are, you know, are, because people get depressed. People that are artists of any kind, like I said, musicians and stuff, or anything, they get really depressed because, you know, if they're not working or they're going through a hard time, it's like, oh my gosh. And people, you know, they have had suicidal thoughts, and, like, to get you for your own point, how did you get out of, you know, that slump?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I think that's a very common theme, very common theme in my own life, and also most artists' life. Thankfully, I've never been to the point where I've been suicidal, you know, thank God, but I've certainly been to that point where it's like, there's like a breaking point. It happened just yesterday, actually, on set. Like, you know, it was a fun day, but it was also a little difficult, but I just laughed it off, and I just said, all right, well, you know, this is a very, you know, I just tried to laugh off and say, oh, well, you know, it happens. Let's move on. Let's go make a movie. That's really all you could do when you're in that situation. But I've certainly been in spots where, you know, if I get a negative review for one of my films or something, you know, it certainly puts me in a very questioning state where I'm like, well, okay, so what does this mean? Should I stop? Should I have done this? Should I have done what that person said that the film should have done? You know, or should I just listen to my gut and just go for it, you know? And so it happens a lot. And it's funny because last year I wrote a book about filmmaking called The Filmmaker's Journey. And it's really all about that type of thing, which is surviving in this industry through all those kind of hardships and through the, you know, through the negative things that can and will happen, and ultimately how to rise above. And I would say, and the thing that always keeps me back, the thing that always gets me to come back over and over again without any kind of questioning is, I would say, just remembering why I do what I do, and that's pretty much the movies, you know, the movies themselves that I see and that I watch. If I see something that a director had done that I really like, then, you know, that kind of fuels my energy once again to keep going. So I would say that's how I rise above in those situations.
Okay. And so with that, thank you for that. What do you actually, are there projects that you're working on that you can speak to? I mean, sometimes people are working on things that they can't speak of, but, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
You know, being on there, it's like, and if there's something, could you tell us the plot of some things that you're working on?
Sure. Yeah, Bent is currently in production, and Bent is about a corrupt cop who's given the ultimatum of having to rat out her partner, or she loses her status as a cop and also loses her child potentially. So a very grim story, very good script though. So that's currently what I'm working on. But I've also written a few screenplays, recently, one of which is a short drama and only 2 pages silent film, which I hope to make next. And, there's also scripts that have been sent to me, by other writers that are interested in having me direct for them. And so I've been kind of looking at those, making the selection process, I suppose. And then on top of all that, really the big project I'm doing now is I'm writing my first feature film, which I really don't want to say what it's about this time, but I will say this though: it's easily my most personal. It's easily my most personal film to date when it gets made, because much like Still Life, it certainly is a self-portrait, but also has a little bit of my sense of humor in there, because I each of my films has some humorous twist to it in some way, depending on the project, of course. But yeah, it certainly has. I mean, the film is almost about me in a way. It's almost like biography. No, not really biography, but more of like an extension as to who I am. I guess if I were to break myself down as a person into a story, I guess that this is what it would be, but it's done as a feature film. And so really looking forward to that, because it combines everything I've learned over the years along with everything I love. And so that's kind of the big one that I'm writing right now.
Oh, cool. You'll have to see. It's like, sometimes it's a continuation when I have someone on here. It's like, because you have to meet your project. It's like, oh, it's like to invite someone else. It's like, oh, okay, I can have you back on the show in the future too.
That's right.
You know? So where, if anybody like wants to know more about you, like, you know, a website, is there something available people can see? What's all your social media?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, just under Chris Esper. I'm also under my production company name, which is Stories in Motion, and my website is storiesmotion.com. There anyone can see all the films, most of the films that I've done, video work, music videos, information about myself and my book, things like that. And so, yeah, it's kind of where the hub of things are, but I'm also on Vimeo and also on YouTube, where the films are also located. Like I said, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. So I'm pretty much social media covered.
Okay. And, you know, with your book, when you're saying book, just definitely clarify it. Is it an e-book or is it a paperback book for people, for available for the public?
Both. It's on Amazon, and you can get it as an e-book for Kindle. You can do it as a, or you can buy it as a paperback on Amazon as well. Recently, and for those who are in Massachusetts, it's actually, and also Rhode Island, it's actually for sale at Books on the Square in Providence. A couple copies are there, and there's also a couple copies at Barnes & Noble in Hingham, Massachusetts, and they're signed, so that's a plus, I guess. So
that's a big achievement, you know. It's to get a book. Maybe you can give me a little pointers. It might be a little different, because you know you have, you know, bringing up the book. You know, I can ask you because you're more of an expert than I am, because. I actually know. So it's like, you know, I learn from a little bit more of a master. This is how we learn, you know.
That's right.
I actually, you know, it's like, ask me a question. Put you on the spot. You didn't know I was going to do this now, did you?
Nope.
So I have a story, right? It's actually called The Fickle Ferret. It's a kid's story, and I don't know, I guess the woman has to get back to me. It's a very short story. I actually did it off of Bookemon, and it has so much, I mean, a kid's story is so difficult, really, to get it made into a, you know, a thing or something like that, and I did, like, a second draft, and it probably has so much more. I mean, how do you, I mean, what is the next step? Because I'm not, like, a proofreader. It's like, you know, if I have the idea, it's solid and stuff, and have people help with it into, like, you know, to get it published. I mean, would you be able to tell me, like, what are steps, if you have the product, right, which I do, and I know it's probably going to need a lot of revising and stuff like that. It is there. The story is there. I have the, you know, the pictures and stuff like that, and maybe a children's book is different than, you know, writing a book like what you've done. But, like, what is the process? Is a children's book getting published different than, you know, something with what you've done, or is it all, like, basically the same thing?
I mean, I think it depends on the route that you go. If you go the same route that I did, which was self-publishing, It's rather easy, actually. I think the biggest thing, though, for any writer who's self-publishing is obviously get an editor. I think that's key to the success of the book, because when I wrote the first draft and I started to send it to a few people, right away, a lot of mistakes were caught, and so I went about finding an editor, and I had three editors on this, actually, because I really wanted it to be as good as it could be, especially for my first book, and so I was able to get a few professionals to look at it, and they broke it down as to what mistakes were there, and also, the best way to fix them, and so I went about. So then they did a lot of the editing for me, and then I went back, tweaked it based on their notes and suggestions, and then eventually I used Amazon's service called Kindle Direct Publishing, where you set up a page for your book, and also you set up the price, you set up and you can also do physical copies with them, and so you upload it, you request a copy, they send it to you in the mail, and you proofread it and check it, make sure everything looks right. So it could be a long, drawn-out process, but it's still worth it after a while. And so that's kind of how it worked for me. I would say it's the same for children's book as well. And there are some companies out there that actually look for submissions. So you can even like submit to them and they'll either say, yes or no, of course, but that's another way of doing it as well. But then the next step, of course, is getting it out there. That's probably the biggest part. It's much like promoting an independent film, I would say, a little harder, actually, because just the avenue is so different, watching something online versus having to, go out and buy a book, it's totally different. And also the fact that if you wanted to go to, Barnes & Noble, like how I did, they do, local author night. And so so I submitted my book to that particular shop. And so they read the book, they liked it, and they said, why don't you come to a local author night, and you can come talk about the book, and you can, sign copies, and you'll be with other local authors. So that's a great way to, get the book out there, to network and meet other authors, get some tips from them. So that's kind of the process I went through. I'm sure it's different for everybody else, but.
Oh, okay. It's just, it's like any information that you give me, because it's like, I actually was like, oh, so you said it was like Amazon.com or something to look it up and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe this is something I can pull up and check that out after. So thank you about that, because like I said, I'm learning. I'm learning as I go, and, you're never too old to learn.
That's right. No, it's just like, filmmaker Akira Kurosawa once said when he won the Oscar, he said, thank you very much, but I'm still a student, and I think that's so true.
Oh my gosh, Crystal, people, it's funny because society, it's like, see, you understand with what I'm going to say. It's like if you go out there, because, like a lot of us, we have to work a regular full-time job, and sometimes you feel like even though, you're paying rent, as long as you got a job paying your rent, everything's good, right? But it's kind of like when you're in society out there, and you're in the kind of the normal society, and you're different, you're an artist, not anything bad, and you try to explain things, it's like, because with society, I think we're so programmed since birth. You have to grow up. You're not supposed to live your dreams. You're supposed to get a job and pay the rent, and you better get a good job. So because of this and that, and it's like forced upon us, like it's programmed. And if you go a different way from the program, it really gets really strange. And connecting and knowing as I'm getting older, I go on, I think at the half point of my life, and I say age doesn't matter, which I'm learning. And people that are older than myself, which I feel very blessed, and it's amazing what they say about success. People that are so successful are people that work on themselves and projects and stuff and help other people. And, going out to California to Dragon Fest and met a lot of Miles, they sat down, they knew my name. I'm like, I haven't made a film yet. I mean, part of something called Valkyrie, which you're part of this weekend for my show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very big weekend. So it's something meeting and connecting with people, even connecting with yourself. And it's like, man, I wish I could work with that person. Because I've been on the air for almost 5 years. I've done over 200 shows. I lost count. And it's like, I'm sitting here talking with you. And it's like, you know, I know it's possible for me to get a car, but it's like, there's so many people I want to work with because I connect with them. And being on the internet, the out of communication is lost. And I'm like, people won't understand what I'm saying until I'm talking to them. They'll think of me like, oh, Shelly and Chuck, she's probably nothing. But when you sit down and you talk with them, they're like, oh my gosh, she's really kind of cool. It's like relating to people. We lost that. We lost so much with technology, which is great. But communication is lost. Everybody's texting. I'm like, no, let me explain. Let me talk. So this is
right.
Another thing about their show. It's getting to connect because, you know, I think I've seen you on Facebook, but it was like, you know, how am I going to know about you till you talk to someone? So I'm starting to connect. And
right.
I'm like, I don't know, maybe this person doesn't like me, but once you sit down and talk, I'm like, holy crap, this person's really cool. You know what I'm saying? It's like the perception. If you don't sit and talk with someone, how do you know? And then I'm like, Chris is cool. You know, this is what keeps happening. It's like, you sit and you connect. Even, you know, it's like, I wish I could work with people. And it's like, people are like, come on down, Shelly, just jump on set. We'll put you in somewhere. And it's like that's what's happened a couple of times on me. You said not that I've had a lot, you know, worked around sets, but not trying to make myself any better than what I am. But it's like, yeah, come on, Shelly, it's pretty cool because it's fun. I, you know, it's like I try to multitask on independent films, trying to help out. And it's really great. I think you're really cool, Chris. And it's like, you know, you've
well,
got inspiration, you've got the passion. Oh, you're welcome. I just see that in you. It's like when I have people, guests on my show, independent filmmakers, I'm so supportive because they do so much with remakes. I'm not saying that the people, the actors and stuff aren't hard working, but people like yourself, and I was saying this from the beginning of the show, and I'm like, I'm so adamant. I'm like, support independent filmmakers because they have a lot of heart. You guys, like, now I'm starting to get it myself, underdog. You know, you don't have that.
Yeah.
Millions and millions of dollars, but you work with what you have. And it's like, look at the guests and try to learn about them. I'm like, look at this person like Chris. He's working his butt off. You know, like I said, sometimes people have to work full-time jobs and then go to this. It's like people can be up for 24 hours, 48 hours just to get a film done after they pay the rent. It's like people just don't understand. You know, they're like before they even see an independent film, oh, this thing's going to suck. But they don't understand the process. And I think once they understand, it's like, oh, my gosh, and they can actually critique a movie better to understand independent filmmakers. They don't get it. You know, so
yeah,
it's something where, you know, I really, truly appreciate your hard work. I understand. And, you know, it's like it's something to say. I hope you grow. I hope you get to do so much more, like, with what you're doing. And it's great. You know, I might not always comment, but I'll be like, I'll go and download it. Oh, look at this friend. What's this person up? Oh, look at, go, Chris, go. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's really good to see that you're going. And, you know, we still got a little bit of time left here, like about 5 minutes or so or something like that. Are there anything in the future that you'd like to do? Anybody that you'd ever want to work with or something like that? Any future projects that you can, anything else?
Yeah, no, I like to, there's a lot of things I like to do. I mean, for sure, doing a feature film is top of my list. That's certainly number one. I also like to get into theater and direct plays. I mean, I started sort of doing that with, there's this thing in Massachusetts called Play in a Day, which is almost like the 48-hour film project, but instead it's with theater, and you basically have a whole day to put on a one-act play for an audience around like 7 p.m. And that's a lot of fun to do. But after doing that twice now, I like to actually do it, you know, with something that I write, or, you know, whether it's a one-act play or a full-length play. But yeah, no, theater is really fascinating to me, so I like to try that and just try to keep. And I also like to write more books, be it fiction or just like with filmmakers' journey, nonfiction that still inspires people, but yet has a lot to say. And so, yeah, I just definitely want to just keep creating, keep writing, and keep doing what I love. I can't imagine myself doing anything else.
Oh, great. All righty. Well, Chris, thank you so much. you know, for being on Ninja Sunday. And when, you know, if you ever have anything like that sent to me, and I can do a reaction to it, if you have, just get a hold of me.
Great.
So I can send you as, you know, as a returning guest. Anytime you need Gumball or something, just give me a shout out, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for being on Ninja Sunday, and you enjoy the rest of your day, okay?
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Here we go. Another show already done. All right. Just to jumpstart that Ninja Sunday, it's Falcon Weekend. Thank you, Chris, for being on my show. And just remember, anybody that has a dream, you are as good as anybody else. And don't you forget it. And look forward to many more shows. And remember, don't forget to rent Selk here on Vimeo. You want to see Crazy Shelly act? There you go. I can't speak for other people that are taking partake in Selk here. I can only speak of my experience, but it was an experience of a lifetime. It is an ongoing series, so check it out, everyone. Have a good day.